Welcome to today's Journal Club webinar. My name is Rachel Dager. I'm the Executive Director of SNEB and glad you're joining us for the final webinar in our series. We have been speaking with authors from the Journal of Nutrition Education and Behavior, and our focus has been to celebrate the FAO International Year of Fruits and Vegetables. So hope you've enjoyed this series. We've had some excellent presentations and are looking forward to our final session today. So a little housekeeping, if you look in the GoToWebinar tool panel, there'll be a handout. So the slides for today's presentation are available for you to download and follow along. We will take questions at the end of the presentation, so please type those in the question block. When I close the webinar today, there'll be a short survey, and we appreciate your feedback on this session, and as always, ideas for future Journal Club webinars. We are organizing the spring Journal Club series that's going to focus on statistics. So I believe we have our first session planned for February the 7th, so watch for more details about the spring series. And also watch for an email, probably Wednesday of this week, which will include the link to the recording that we're making, the handout, as well as the CEU certificate that you're earning from your attendance today. So I will turn things over to our moderator. Dr. Kristen DiFilippo is assistant professor at the University of Illinois.
Thank you, Rachel. Today I get to present our presenter, introduce our presenters rather. First, we have Amanda Foltz, who is a registered dietitian who recently completed her PhD in nutrition at the University of Delaware. She is currently a postdoctoral fellow at the University of Pennsylvania Perelman School of Medicine in the Center for Health Behavior Research, mentored by Dr. Karen Glanz. Prior to her PhD, Amanda was a SNAP educator and home-based counselor in the Philadelphia region. Samantha Sundermeyer is a registered dietitian currently pursuing her PhD at Johns Hopkins University. Prior to entering her PhD program, she completed an undergraduate, graduate, and dietetic internship at the University of Delaware. Sarah Katz is the health sciences librarian and associate librarian at the University of Delaware, who helped create and conduct the search terms for this paper. And Sharon Robson is a registered dietitian and associate professor at the University of Delaware. She was the advisor and mentor for both Amanda and Sam while they completed their studies at the University of Delaware and oversaw the project being presented. I want to thank all four of them for joining us today. And at this point, I can hand it over to our presenters.
Great, thank you so much. That was a wonderful introduction. I am going to start off the presentation, and we're gonna, as you can tell, there's a couple of presenters today. So these were all co-authors on the article that's titled More Frequent Food Shopping May Promote Fruit and Vegetable Intake, a Systematic Review. It was just recently published in the Journal of Nutrition Education and Behavior. And so we all worked together on writing the paper, and so we will be co-presenters for today's presentation. Next. So we just want to start off by saying that presenters report no conflict of interest. There was no funding support received for the project that we're presenting on. Next. In terms of the nutrition educator competencies, based on our presentation, competency 1.5 within basic food and nutrition knowledge, 5.2 within food and nutrition policy, and 10.1 within nutrition education research methods. Next. So I'm going to begin the presentation by providing some background. And of course, in order to do that, I'm going to start by talking about the dietary guidelines, because one of the main outcomes of the study is fruit and vegetable intake. And so the dietary guidelines, or the DGAs, they provide recommendations on what and how much to eat and drink. The recommendations are based on nutrient-dense food and beverages that provide vitamins and minerals and have little added sugar, saturated fat, and sodium. Research in the DGAs recommend establishing a healthy dietary pattern to decrease the risk of chronic disease. Next. So if we narrow in on fruits and vegetables, the two food groups of interest for the systematic review, we can utilize the dietary guidelines to inform us of how much we should be eating from these groups. Broadly, recommendations for adults include 2 cups per day of fruits, and 2.5 cups per day for vegetables. We can use these as target values in health promotion, but also in evaluating how we're doing meeting the goals of the dietary guidelines. Next. And so these two images are taken from the current 2020 dietary guidelines, and they represent a food group perspective on how the US adults are doing meeting the recommendations. So Sarah, if you can hit the next button, it's just gonna highlight some things on this. There you go. Okay, so on the left-hand side are average intakes versus the recommended intakes for 19 to 30-year-olds, and on the right are for 31 to 59-year-olds. So what I have highlighted right now in the box shows that the light blue is indicating the recommended intake ranges based on the dietary guidelines, and then the purple dot tells us what our average intakes are for this age range. So if you want to hit the button again, and then on the other side it's for 31 to 59 year olds, and then go ahead and hit it again and again. Great. So what we can see, I've highlighted just the fruit and vegetable food groups. And what we can see is that we are, as adults, we are falling below the recommended intakes for fruits and vegetables. Next slide. So what do we know about American consumption of fruits and vegetables? Well, we know that consumption of fruits and vegetables are low, and only 12% of adults are meeting recommendations for daily fruit intake, and 9% of adults meet recommendations for vegetable intake. Adequate consumption contributes towards a healthy overall diet, and this includes diet quality and decreased risk for chronic diseases. When addressing dietary concerns like fruits and vegetable intake, it's important to understand all the factors that contribute to the issue. So, for example, that can allow us to apply an ecological framework to examine this individual level behavior, to really truly understand all of the different factors that are impacting our individual level, like fruit and vegetable intake. Next slide. So that brings me to the table that you see here, which is the social ecological model and all of the different levels and those factors that impact fruit and vegetable intake. So for example, for the policy level factors, we see that enrollment in federal nutrition assistance programs might have an impact on fruit and vegetable intake, but also the frequency that the nutrition assistance benefits are distributed. At the community level, factors that impact fruit and vegetable intake include access to stores, affordability of healthy food, transportation mode, how you get to the stores, and then types of stores that are available in your neighborhood. Interpersonal level factors include the home social food environment, which might include family meals. Do you eat family meals? How often are you having family meals? And then the physical home food environment, so the access and availability of fruits and vegetables within your home. And then we have individual level factors that might impact fruit and vegetable intake, which include sociodemographics and personal characteristics, but also some early factors like early childhood introduction to fruits and vegetables and the development of taste preferences. And then the one bullet there that says food shopping frequency is what we're going to talk about within this systematic review and presentation, is that maybe the rate of your shopping frequency might impact the fruits and vegetables you have available in your home, and then the impacting ultimately your consumption of those fruits and vegetables. Next slide. So this brings me to the concept on which my research is most aligned with, and that's the broad concept of food acquisition. So food acquisition is the process of getting or obtaining food, and this term technically includes all manners in which a person might obtain food. So it most often occurs by an individual making food purchases, but it could include obtaining food from like food pantries, or maybe you get food from family and friends and restaurants, and right, so the list can go on and on. I introduced the term here, but I note that we are going to be focused on food purchases for the method of obtaining fruits and vegetables within the systematic review. And food shopping or food purchasing, what it ultimately does is it requires an individual to interact with a supermarket or a grocery store or a farmer's market, a corner store, basically that retail food environment, which is that higher level social ecological model factor that might be playing a role in this as well. Next slide. So frequency of food shopping may be modifiable through the notion that more frequent food shopping promotes the purchase of perishable items like fruits and vegetables, which impacts the home environment by creating an opportunity for accessibility and availability of fruits and vegetable offerings. And this was examined by Kegler et al. In 2014. Most recently, an article by Drisdell et al. In 2020, they examined frequency of food shopping and found that it was not associated with higher fruit and vegetable intake. However, this was tested within a food insecure population, and the authors of that article note that there's just overall mixed findings within this area of research, and they suggest that future research revisit the notion that more frequent food shopping promotes perishable food purchases, which then would lead to like fruit and vegetable consumption. So frequency of food shopping is important to understand, as it may be particularly relevant to populations participating in federal nutrition assistance programs, where allotments are distributed on a monthly basis, and that may discourage more frequent food shopping. And then that might then impact the availability and accessibility of food within the federal nutrition assistance program user households. So examining this notion within federal nutrition assistance populations may be a natural place to test different levels of shopping frequency. Next slide. So this brings me to the aims of the systematic review. So the primary aim was to conduct a systematic review examining the relationship between frequency of food shopping and fruit and vegetable intake in adults. And my hypothesis here was that food shopping more frequently would result in higher intakes of fruits and vegetables, given the notion that the frequency of food shopping influences the home availability of fruits and vegetables, especially for fresh produce. And then the secondary aim was to examine if participation in federal nutrition assistance programs was related to fruit and vegetable intake. And this aim was devised given allotment distribution could feasibly impact the frequency of shopping. And so the aims help to answer the question, does more frequent food shopping increase fruit and vegetable intake? And so at this time, I'm going to turn it over to Shannon and Sarah, who will go over the methods.
Great. So the systematic review was guided by the 2009 preferred reporting items for systematic reviews and meta-analysis statement, so better known as PRISMA. So the 2009 PRISMA statement was really established to promote transparent reporting according to why a review was done, what was done, and then what was found. So to achieve this transparency, a 27-item checklist states the recommended items for reporting within a manuscript or a paper. So while the 2009 PRISMA statement guided this work, a new 2020 statement has since been published and replaces that 2009 version. On the slide, which doesn't appear to be showing up currently right now so well, is a portion of the 2020 PRISMA checklist, which would highlight some of the categories to show the information that needs to be kind of garnished from the individual studies in a systematic review. So in addition to the PRISMA statement, we also use the Cochrane Handbook for Systematic Reviews of Interventions as a reference. So this resource is really developed to guide individuals who are doing Cochrane reviews on the effect of healthcare interventions. However, it does describe standard methodology. So things such as how would you go about planning a review? How do you search and select studies? What is a risk of bias assessment you might consider? And how do you interpret results? So these two established resources really provided the framework for this review, and it will become apparent as we continue to share the methods and results that will follow along what's required to be reported through the PRISMA guidelines. Next slide, please. So one of the first components when thinking about a systematic review is to really establish your eligibility criteria. So similar to if you were designing a study with participants coming in, you want to understand who could come into the study or who could not. So we wanted to think about what papers should be included or should not be included in this systematic review. So for the purposes of this review, papers had to have the variables of interest. So they needed to include some type of measure of frequency of shopping and then also a measure of fruit and vegetable intake. And those two variables had to be analyzed in terms of their relationship. It's really important to point out that any study that examined this relationship was included, even if it was not the primary aim of the study. So we recognize this as a limitation headed in that perhaps a study might not be powered to answer that specific question. However, it can still provide some kind of snapshot into what that relationship may be. In addition to the variables of interest that had to have some additional eligibility criteria, so the study population was focused on adults, which was 18 to 65 years of age. We excluded adults over the age of 65, given their shopping behaviors may change as individuals age. This could include decreased frequency or maybe not participating in shopping behaviors at all. Studies were also limited to those conducted within the United States, and this was really to control for any potential cultural differences in shopping habits, but it also allowed for examination of the federal nutrition assistance programs, which are here in the United States. All articles had to be full-length manuscripts published in a peer-reviewed journal in English, and we looked specifically for studies that had a design that was cross-sectional, longitudinal, a cohort, or randomized study design. This meant we excluded qualitative studies, case control studies, narratives, or other reviews. All articles had to be published prior to October 2020. So based on the topic and this eligibility criteria, we looked at information sources and selected the best search strategy, which Sarah will elaborate on next in terms of how it was developed.
Okay, I'm going to speak briefly about our search strategy. We conducted a comprehensive search in four online databases. We searched in PubMed, CINAHL Plus with full text, Web of Science, and the Cochrane Library's Central Controlled Register of Controlled Trials, or Cochrane Central. In these databases, the search was first established in PubMed and then was adapted in subsequent databases according to the constraints of those resources. The search strategies, the search terms are listed on the screen, but included terms related to eating, food preferences, diet, feeding behaviors, fruits and vegetables, and consumer behaviors, as well as shopping patterns, food accessibility, food shopping, grocery stores, and supermarkets. Finally, we also conducted hand searching of the references of all the articles, included articles. I'm going to pass back to Shannon now.
Great. Go to the next slide. So once the search terms were really defined, and as Sarah mentioned, it was first done in PubMed and then subsequently in each of the databases, it allowed us to identify the number of records. And then from there, we were able to continue with the study selection process. So what occurred is there were three reviewers, two independent reviewers, and a third one was used as needed. All are registered dietitian nutritionists. So the title and abstract of each record was reviewed by the two independent reviewers, and this was based on the established eligibility criteria, which we just shared. And ultimately, you're looking at the eligibility criteria to determine if a full text of that article should be reviewed. If there was disagreement about if the full text should be reviewed between the two independent reviewers, a third reviewer was used to achieve consensus for that decision. So once all the articles for full review were determined, the same process occurred where full text review was conducted by two independent reviewers, meaning they read the entire article to see if they met the eligibility criteria for the systematic review. If there is disagreement based on full article review, a third reviewer was again brought in to read the full article and achieve consensus about the decision. Next slide. Based on the articles that were selected for inclusion in the systematic review, a data collection process occurred where data items are extracted from each of the studies selected. We created an Excel database that was developed that listed and defined the variables to be extracted from each study. So these included things such as the study design, the study location, the sample size, sample characteristics, so things about the participants in those studies such as sex, race, ethnicity, their frequency of shopping, or the participation in federal nutrition assistance programs. If applicable, we also included the length of follow-up. And then if stated, we would identify the covariates used in any analyses, and of course would report out the outcomes related to frequency of shopping and fruit and vegetable intake. So these data were extracted independently by two individuals, and then they were compared to ensure accuracy and completion. If there were discrepancies at that point, the original source record was used to resolve discrepancies. Next slide, please. So as suggested by PRISMA and also Cochrane, is a step to assess the risk of bias of each study. So there are many different tools for bias assessment that essentially consider the quality of each study included in a systematic review. This is important because it helps us consider the strength of the evidence being presented. We chose the quality criteria checklist from the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, which is based on the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality Systems, and it rates the strength of scientific evidence for each included study. The quality criteria checklist includes 4 questions on relevance and 10 questions on validity. An example of the checklist is provided on the screen. And for each question, there's a response of yes, no, unclear, or not applicable. Based on these responses, a study is given a rating of positive, neutral, or negative, with positive indicating a strong study, neutral indicating a neutral study, and then negative indicating a weak study in terms of quality. A letter rating was also assigned based on study design. For example, a rating of A would be given to a randomized control trial, which is a much stronger study design than a cross-sectional study, which would be given a letter D. I'll now pass it back to Amanda to share the results of the systematic review.
All right, thank you. So I'm gonna now present our findings. So next slide. So this figure represents the consort diagram for our literature search and screening process. In total, we had 1,878 records that were identified through the search strategy. 635 duplicates were removed and 1,167 articles were excluded for not meeting inclusion criteria. This left 76 for full article review, and from there, 53 were excluded for not meeting inclusion criteria. 23 were left for analysis, and 1 was included based on the hand searching, which was recommended based off of the PRISMA guidelines. The final search resulted in 24 articles, and the majority of them were cross-sectional. And as a reminder, the selected articles had to have the variables and data for frequency of food shopping and fruit and vegetable intake, but the majority did not include these variables as their main purpose. And so as a result, in the diversity of studies, a meta-analysis was not able to be completed. Next slide. So of the 24 articles that were included in the review, 88% were observational, and that was either cross-sectional or longitudinal. 13% were experimental, including a quasi-experimental design and one that was a cluster randomized control trial. Broadly, studies ranged from a sample of 62 participants to 7,298. Participants were predominantly female, but there was representation across racial and ethnic minorities. 14 of the 24 studies reported on government federal nutrition assistance, and then participation in government federal nutrition assistance programs ranged from 1 to 100%. 15 studies reported on income, with the majority reporting less than $50,000. 18 studies explicitly stated confounders for final analyses, with most controlling for sociodemographic characteristics. In the following slides, I'm going to divide up our findings based off of the observational findings first, and then those are further broken down by store type. So we'll go through grocery store and supermarket, farmer's market, corner stores, and then multiple store types. And then we'll get into the experimental findings. Next slide. So within observational studies, the first category that we're going to examine is within grocery stores or supermarkets. Overall, there were 9 studies within this store type, and all of them were cross-sectional. 3 studies found a positive association of shopping frequency defined as times per month and higher fruit and vegetable intake. 1 of the 3 studies used 24-hour recalls, so that little bit higher level dietary assessment method. And they assess this using the Healthy Eating Index, which is a method of assessing dietary intake against the dietary guidelines. And it provides a score based on 0 to 100, with 100 indicating that you had perfect adherence to the dietary guidelines. And this study found that grocery shopping 3 to 4 or more times per month, compared to just 1 time per month, resulted in a higher HEI score for total fruit and whole fruit, so just within that fruit category. One study assessed shopping frequency as times per week and found that people shopping five or more times per week compared to less than four times per week were 1.8 to 2.8 times more likely to consume fruits and vegetables. And through path analysis and structural equation modeling, three studies found frequency of grocery shopping in times defined as times per week directly and significantly influenced fruit and vegetable intake. Next slide. So the next store type category that we lumped the articles into was for farmers markets. And here we had eight total studies that examined food shopping frequency and fruit and vegetable intake within farmers markets. Seven used a cross-sectional design and one used a longitudinal study design. Of the eight, three studies examined farmers market visits on a yearly basis. So two found that shopping at a farmer's market greater than or equal to one time per year, as compared to less than one time per year in SNAP participants, had significantly higher fruit intake and fruit and vegetable intake. One study found frequency of shopping at farmer's markets as measured by a few times per year versus never was not associated with fruit and vegetable intake. One study found no significant differences in fruit and vegetable intake, which measured frequency as first time versus repeat customers to a mobile produce van. For the two studies finding a positive association, shopping frequency was assessed on a monthly basis, with one study finding an association for people who shopped greater than or equal to one time per month, and that was against those that never shopped, but not less than one time per month versus never. The other study used two survey methods. The first was a farmers market survey, where they found that those who shopped at a farmer's market 2 to 3 times per month consumed 0.8 more servings than those who shopped once a month. And then the other survey method was a random digit dial phone survey. And this also found that those who shopped 2 to 3 times per month consumed one serving more fruits and vegetables in Kentucky, and then 1.3 servings more of fruits and vegetables in North Carolina. And that compared those to that shopped one time per month. The last cross-sectional study assessed multiple frequency levels and found associations such that more frequent shopping, and that was defined as greater than or equal to two times per week, was associated with consuming more fruits and vegetables than those who shopped a few times per year or less. The longitudinal study examined farmers market visits over 19 months and found that those enrolled in the Fresh Fund program for less than 6 months, food shopping frequency was associated with fruit and vegetable intake. Next slide. We had one study that assessed shopping frequency and fruit and vegetable intake in corner stores, and this was a cross-sectional study design. And this study found that it did not differ for those who reported shopping one time a day versus those who shopped 5 to 6 times per week or less. Those who shopped more than one time per day consumed about 5.1 servings per day versus those who shopped less than 5 to 6 times per week. They consumed about 4.6 servings, and that difference was not statistically significant. Next slide. The final observational studies that the category that we grouped them in were based on multiple store types. And so this was defined as studies that assessed greater than two types of stores within one study. And there were four studies total, and all of which were a cross-sectional design. The first study assessed weekly shopping at different store types and fruit and vegetable intake. There was an association between farmers markets and specialty stores, such that for every day per week increase in food shopping, shoppers had 1.6 higher odds of consuming at least two servings of fruits and vegetables. However, this was not seen in other store types besides the farmers markets and specialty stores. Another study assessed shopping frequency on the basis of trips per month and found that more frequent shopping was related to consuming more fresh fruits and vegetables at grocery stores and farmers markets. They also found that shopping at corner stores was associated with lower odds of consuming fresh fruits and vegetables. However, we didn't see this same association for convenience stores. One study assessed shopping categorically as never, rarely, sometimes, or often, and frequent visits, which was defined as sometimes or often, to farmers markets and food stands was associated with increased fruit and vegetable intake while frequent visits to convenience stores was associated with lower fruit and vegetable intake. And then there were no other associations by store type. The last study grouped stores by healthfulness. So for example, a full service supermarket was considered a healthy store, while a discount store was considered moderately healthy, and a convenience store was considered unhealthy. Those that shopped at more frequently at discount stores, which was considered that moderately healthy store, consumed 0.8 more cups of fruits and vegetables compared to less frequent shoppers. And participants who shopped at specialty stores, which would be considered a healthy store, consumed 0.2 more cups of fruits and vegetables. And when shopping at a fruit and vegetable specific store, another healthy store, shoppers consumed 0.1 more cups of fruits and vegetables. Next slide. And then we'll get into the experimental studies. So we had three studies that use experimental designs. However, again, none of them had the specific objective to test food shopping frequency. The first quasi-experimental study examined frequency defined as greater than one time per month and compared this to participants shopping less than one time per month for shopping in a mobile produce van. And they compared differences from baseline to follow-up. Participants who shopped more frequently at the mobile produce van consumed 1.6 more servings of fruits and vegetables per day than those who never or rarely shopped at the mobile produce van. The second quasi-experimental study assessed food shopping frequency between those who shopped at a new neighborhood grocery store, and this was defined as greater than one time per month compared to less frequent shopping, which was defined as less than one time per month. They used 24-hour diet recalls in this study, and they found that frequency was not associated with higher fruit and vegetable intake. And then finally, in the cluster randomized control trial, randomization occurred at the store level. So frequency of shopping at tribal convenience stores was assessed as times per week. And in tribe A, there was only a between group, and their between groups were intervention versus control. So there was a between group effect for food shopping less than weekly and green salad and other vegetable intake. And in tribe B, there was a between group effect for shopping 1 to 2 times per week and fruit intake. Next slide. So this relates back to, we're now getting into the secondary aim of the systematic review, which was to examine this within government and federal nutrition assistance programs. So overall, we had 14 of the 24 studies report on government federal nutrition assistance participation. Due to only 4 having a sample size of 100% on government and federal food assistance programs, it limits our ability to examine if participation was related to fruit and vegetable intake. Next slide. But these this slide is going to highlight those 4 that had 100% participation. So one study found fruit intake was higher among those who reported shopping at farmers market at least once a year, with participants reporting consuming fruit 1.3 times per day compared to consuming fruit just 0.8 times per day for participants who never shopped at farmers markets. Between SNAP recipients and non-recipients, those who shopped more than one time per year at farmers markets reported consuming a higher number of fruit and vegetable servings per day compared to those who never shopped at farmers markets. And the difference here was 4.7 servings versus 3.6 servings. By assessing a farmers market incentive program, one study found that frequent shoppers were 1.2 times more likely to consume 1 to 2 servings per day, 1.2 times as likely to consume 3 to 4 servings per day, and 1.3 times more likely to consume greater than 5 servings per day compared to those who consumed less than 1 serving per day. And then the last study found that SNAP participants who shopped at farmers markets more than one time a month compared to never had higher fruit and vegetable intake. Next slide. I'm going to wrap up my section here by talking about the reporting bias. So Shannon had mentioned how we had looked at risk and bias assessment using the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics quality criteria checklist. So based off of that checklist, what we found was that we had a vast number of cross-sectional studies. And so all 24 studies received a neutral rating. We had one study receive a rating of A for its cluster randomized control trial design. The 23 other studies were class D due to the cross-sectional longitudinal or quasi-experimental study designs. And at this point, I will turn it over to Sam.
Thank you. So to summarize everything, the majority of studies found a positive relationship between food shopping frequency and fruit and vegetable intake. However, as we just saw, most studies were observational in nature, and they were conducted mostly in grocery stores and farmers markets. Only two studies looked at this relationship in corner stores and convenience stores, which might be due to the fact that there's just less fruits and vegetables available overall in those store types. Although there has been a significant amount of work done in recent years to improve the healthy food availability in those store types, in corner stores and convenience stores, yet both of the studies we've looked at found that shopping more frequently at those stores was associated with lower fruit and vegetable intake. And since most of the studies were observational, there's a clear need for experimental studies to confirm the relationship and potentially identify what type of shopping frequency is needed in order to improve fruit and vegetable intake. Next slide, please. So as Amanda mentioned, looking at the relationship between shopping frequency and fruit and vegetable intake in the context of federal nutrition assistance programs wasn't the primary aim of the review, it was a secondary aim. We felt it was important to mention that only those four articles looked at this relationship directly in those populations. So more work is needed in this area to understand how the relationship works in that context, which could be helpful for people receiving those benefits and for those providing counseling to them. So for example, benefits are often received in a monthly lump sum, and data has shown that households tend to redeem their benefits in a large portion within the first 2 weeks of receiving them, and most do so within the first 7 days. So this does allow for some purchasing freedom, but it limits the ability to replenish fresh fruits and vegetables throughout the month if their budgets aren't budgeted accordingly. So this type of work could inform policy around distribution of those benefits and support education for families enrolled in programs like SNAP Ed surrounding food budgeting in this way. So it's a good opportunity to test this idea that more frequent food shopping promotes the purchase of fruits and vegetables, which can then influence the home environment and dietary intake. So we need more studies in this area to test the relationship specifically in this population. Next slide. So there are a few limitations that we wanted to note in addition to the overwhelming number of observational study designs. There was heterogeneity of measures across studies, as you saw. So one being the definition of shopping frequency. So we saw that some studies looked at weekly shopping versus monthly shopping, all the way up to a more broad category, such as yearly versus never in the case of those farmers market studies. And the second being in the assessment of fruit and vegetable intake. So some studies use the behavioral risk factor surveillance system survey. Some people use dietary screeners. There were 24-hour diet recalls. We saw FFQs. The list goes on. So that, of course, limited the ability to draw conclusions across studies. We also included any study that examined the relationship between food shopping frequency and fruit and vegetable intake, as Shannon mentioned, even if it wasn't the primary aim of the study. And we did have Sarah on our team, who is a trained health sciences librarian that helped us conduct a systematic search, but of course we could have missed studies. And we only examined work done in the US, which of course limits our generalizability. Next slide. So to close, we know that fruit and vegetable intake continues to be inadequate for most Americans, and that this low intake is linked to chronic disease risk. So we have all these observational studies with data indicating that more frequent shopping is related to higher fruit and vegetable intake, which is promising because food shopping frequency could be a modifiable behavior that we could use to influence fruit and vegetable intake. So we need more experimental research to test the directionality and causality of this relationship, and to help us understand implications of things like location, such as urban versus rural, age, use of federal nutrition assistance programs, to understand the factors that influence shopping frequency. Next slide. So So that brings us to the end of the presentation. So we thank you for your time and for having us today, and we will open it up for questions.
Kristen, it's Rachel. I'm not sure we're hearing you with questions.
How about now?
Perfect.
Okay, sorry about that. I had unmuted myself, but I hadn't turned my volume up. So as people have questions, if they could type those into the question box. One question that I do have for you, and thank you so much for sharing your work with us, is as you think about and moving on to the next steps of research, would you hypothesize based on what you've read, and I know you can't determine directionality, but would you hypothesize that increasing shopping increases fruits and vegetables, or that people who have a preference for fruits and vegetables shop more often?
Yeah, I think that would be something that would definitely need to be teased out with more well-controlled research studies. There is just the notion that more frequent food shopping, it promotes the purchase of the perishable items. It might impact the home food environment, but again, we don't know who's eating the fruits and vegetables within that home environment. And it goes back to, are we talking about fresh fruits and vegetables? What about canned? What about frozen, which lasts a lot longer? So I think that it's an interesting notion to be considering, because it's something that's easy to modify, to recommend to people to increase their shopping frequency, or maybe, think about fruits and vegetables or those fresh perishable items that can be purchased on a more frequent shopping basis. But to be able to say, is it people that consume more fruits and vegetables, or is it just the presence of them being in the home? I don't think we can tell that at this point.
Thank you. Another question. What would you consider, based on all the different studies you read, what would you consider to be the target shopping frequency? If a dietitian was saying, hey, how often should I recommend people shop for their food? What would you recommend?
I would love to say a exact rate, but unfortunately we can't. I think what would be a good natural starting point for people interacting with clients or patients is to figure out what they currently do, and figure out what their current consumption looks like, and then maybe recommend something that fits within their budget and within what they're capable of doing, and see if it has an impact. I think that that's where the research needs to really go, so that we can say, chopping two times, a month or once a week, but we don't have that answer yet. So I think it's at this point really getting to know the individual and figuring out if you can work with them on that one-on-one basis to promote, fruit and vegetable intake that way.
Yeah. And my next question was actually going to be very similar policy-wise. If you're talking about food benefits, how, and right now, obviously the distribution is monthly in most instances, would you recommend increasing that, and what would you recommend increasing that to?
Yeah, I think it's important. I was a SNAP educator, so thinking back to my time doing that, we focused on lessons on budgeting, right? So I think it's, again, if you're able to work I don't know, maybe in a group setting, if you're putting on like a nutrition series, like lesson series at a library, or if you're able to work one-on-one with individuals, it's really talking about the importance of food budgeting to be able to say, you know, if you can get yourself to the store more often, it might help you with purchasing fresh fruits and vegetables, because we know that those go bad. And if you're shopping on that monthly basis, the thought there is that the fresh items would go bad, or they would be consumed by the end of the month. But it's also about thinking, how can you promote maybe those frozen and canned items? And I think that we mentioned a couple of times within the presentation is that testing the frequency would be like a natural place for it to happen within federal nutrition assistance programs, like let's say SNAP, for example. If we can sort of maybe adjust the allotment distribution so that it's not on a monthly basis, and to see if that has any impact, I think that that would be a really great study to move forward in this area.
Yeah, it would be neat to look at. How long did the study take you to complete?
I think we started in the summertime with our searches. Systematic reviews take a long time because there's like this time factor. So even when you go to submit the article to be published, by the time like your reviews come back, there might have been articles that have been published from the time that you ended your search. So all in all, I'd say it probably took us close to 2 years, if I'm remembering correctly, to get this. And then that, you know, we were always able to sort of like update our search with our search terms and increase our dates out. But I'd say it took us about 2 years to complete.
Okay. And then one of our listeners says that they think home gardens do contribute to higher fruit and vegetable consumption. So should this practice be promoted in addition to frequent shopping?
Yeah, I think that's another factor that should be examined. You know, I think when we design interventions or we look at surveys, one of the questions should be, you know, like what does your home look like? What is your home environment? Do you have that garden? Because you're right that that does promote fruit and vegetable intake. So absolutely, I think that's something that researchers can think about when they go to look at this.
And then another question. So it says, it sounds like increasing shopping frequency is associated with increased fruit and vegetable consumption. Do you think that that's true in an absolute sense or just relatively? In other words, do you think the percent of fruit and vegetable in the diet also went up? Or do people who shop more frequently just consume more of everything?
Yeah, I think that's another great question to consider. And I think based off of the quality of the research studies that we have, there's just not a way to answer that at this point. But definitely something that, you know, I'm interested in looking at in more detail. So that's a good question. And I don't know if any of my co-authors have any other input to add to that.
I think the only thing I would add is many of the studies, right, they didn't have outcomes related to the rest of the diet, that they're really truly just looking at fruit and vegetable like endpoints. So that's a really difficult question, typically is going to require a more comprehensive diet assessment. And that's what we weren't seeing as well, to really be able to, you know, look at, is it the percent of fruit and vegetable of the entire diet or not? But I do think it's a very good question.
Well, I want to thank all of you for sharing this work with us and for joining us today, and thank all our attendees for listening. At this point, I can hand it back to Rachel.
Yes, thank you all very much. Just a reminder, there'll be a short survey when I close the webinar, and your feedback is appreciated. Watch for an email probably before Wednesday of this week with a link to the recording, the handout, and the CEU certificate. I don't believe we have any webinars scheduled from now until the end of the year, but definitely watch the SNEB website. We anticipate the Spring Journal Club to start on February 7th, and I know several SNEB divisions are working on webinars as well. I can remind you that SNEB abstracts are now being accepted for the 2022 conference. We're hoping to meet in person in Atlanta, but have virtual options for abstract presentations as well. So look forward to maybe seeing you online, definitely seeing you online, but maybe seeing you in person next year. Thank you all.